Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to CJSF 90.1 FM. How are you doing,
here,
Peter?
Peter R.H. is here after 3 weeks.
My name is Magnus Tewald, and all right. Welcome to the program. We got some good stuff coming up for you today. We're going to start off with a bit of a report about the Gaza encampment at the University of the Vancouver Island University, which was removed and dismantled today. We have a bit of also a report about surviving and coping with wildfires, which have been raging throughout the province for much of the summer. What do you got coming up today, Peter?
Well, I about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I kind of gave a bit of a pass to Rebel News, but I saw something I wanted to distance myself from. They went over to Ireland about a month ago or so, and they got a problem. Well, they perceived a problem with people who were like migrants coming there, and the Ezra Levant was sort of harassing some guy who was in a tent, who was from the Ukraine, I think. And I guess he figures if you're an able-bodied guy in your early 20s, you can't have a legitimate reason for refugee status or whatever. So, but actually, the other thing I picked up on just a few days ago was there's this Amish community in Ontario that doesn't use any electronic devices, doesn't use telephones, doesn't use the internet, and they got into a problem because the federal government said they owed $400,000, like the whole community did, and because they hadn't, because they sometimes went to the border and back during the pandemic, and they didn't use the app because they don't use any of that stuff, and they weren't aware of it either, and they so what happened was that they go for like a loan or they're trying to change property from father to son. The father may have died. And the bank stopped them. And they're stopped from a lot of legal aspects happening. And so what happened was somebody who was a friend of the community, not part of the Amish community in Ontario, and then a specific one in Ontario, I presume it's kind of close to the United States border too, knew about the situation, and he kind of knew about Rebel News because he watched, and he knew that they would sometimes help people up with, they have a sort of a, I forget their exact name, but they'll help with legal trouble, so pay the legal costs, for example, to Tamara Leach and the other person involved was the Ottawa trucker convoy. Their legal expenses are covered by Rebel News. So this person contacted Ezra Levant, and he has a half-hour thing I saw over the weekend. And he said, well, I'm not allowed to really and interview directly any of the people. He talked to the person who told him about the what the problem was, and he kind of showed the community. He showed, you know, where they were and around. So that was positive. But I find that he gets into this anti-immigration thing, which I'm going to say maybe something controversial here. I'm neither for nor against as such immigration. And what I mean by that, we obviously can't bring everybody to Canada that would that, that but ought to be here. You know, there's a lot of people in this world that are not doing well, and we, I think, are 400 million, 40 million people in Canada. In that's our population.
About that, yeah.
Yeah, and most of us hug the U.S. border. You know, I mean, so, I mean, but I feel if someone's here in Canada, that's fine. I don't feel there's anything wrong with that. I don't like the idea, like, this is more the United States-Mexico situation. I mean, if you had Tucker Carlson in his actual next life, he'll probably be born in Mexico for his karma.
Yeah.
And he'll probably be some guy climbing over the fence and or whatever. So, I mean, I don't – how they make guilt part of it, which I don't agree with. So, anyway, Magnus, are we going to hear a report now? Or?
Yes, we are. ever since the terrorist incident on October 7th, in which Hamas attacked Israel, and then the response from Israel with the invasion of Gaza, which is ongoing even today, nearly 10 months later, and tens of thousands of deaths. I think beginning in the fall of last year, camps started appearing at various universities around North America, starting in the States and then quickly spreading to numerous campuses here in Canada, including at UBC here in Vancouver. There wasn't one here at SFU because the activists in Vancouver decided to focus their efforts on one camp rather than many camps around the region. And also camps at the University of Victoria and the University of Vancouver Island University in Nanaimo. Most of those camps have disappeared, disappearing, you know, I think beginning in the late spring and over the summer. The one at Vancouver Island was one of the last ones to be going. And on late last week, a Supreme Court decision passed an injunction to have it removed. That camp was, in fact, dissembled, taken apart yesterday. But this report from Friday afternoon goes into more of the details about that court decision.
This is a CHY News update. On day 106 of the VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment at Vancouver Island University's Nanaimo campus, the BC Supreme Court approved an injunction ordering the removal of the encampment. The VIU encampment, which is the last known pro-Palestinian campus encampment left standing in Canada, has been given 72 hours starting at 9:30 a.m. on August 15th to leave its current location on campus. Justice Michael Stevens delivered his decision on the civil case VIU filed after the Solidarity encampment refused to leave after receiving a trespass notice from the university stating they had to vacate by 8 a.m. July 15th. The judge ruled to allow an interim injunction for 150 days on the grassy quad area between the library, cafeteria, and theater where the encampment sits. VIU stated in its notice of application that the encampment's use of the area and its pallet barricade prevents members of the community from using the space for informal gatherings and recreational use. A statement from the encampment issued on August 11th notes the grassy area used by the encampment is, quote, often wet and a hub for bunny feces and was not an area ever used, end quote. VIU also sought a court-mandated curfew for students coming to campus, excluding those coming and going from the student residence, from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., the judge rejected this request. As well, Judge Stevens rejected VIU's request to allow police enforcement terms. This would have ordered the RCMP and any other police authority to remove and arrest any person who is knowingly breaking the injunction order. VIU states in their notice of application that injunction is needed as, quote, the police have thus far been unwilling to assist with the removal of the encampment without an injunction, end quote. The judge also moved for each party to bear their own expenses. In the notice of application, VIU states it spent more than $870,000 on encampment-related matters since the start of it on May 1st. It states this cost will, quote, lead to further staff layoffs, reduced services to students, and potential reduction or loss of in-person academic programs on campus in the upcoming semesters, end quote. During the 2023-2024 school year, Vancouver Island University faced a deficit of $20 million and accumulated an operating deficit of $46.9 million since the fiscal 2019-2020 academic year. During the 2023-2024 school year, students, staff, and community members saw cuts to many popular programs, including the Elder College Program and the closing of the high school at VIU. VIU also cut the Integrated Engineering Technologist Diploma, the Advanced Diploma in Geographic Information Systems Application Program, along with the Master's in Geographic Information Systems Applications Program, and the much-beloved Bachelor's of Music in Jazz Studies Program. In a statement from VIU posted on August 15th, VIU states they, quote, sincerely hope those in the encampment comply with the court order and vacate the quad before the court-imposed deadline, end quote. They also state that VIU has requested assistance from the RCMP to support the enforcement of the order if the encampment participants remain at the close of the 72 hours. They state that while they respect and support the right to peaceful protest and diverse viewpoints, the court order will ensure that the campus quad is, quote, returned to the entire community and prevent any individual groups from occupying a shared space for extended periods to promote a single perspective, end quote. In a statement from the Palestine Solidarity Encampment, following the results of the trial, they state it's disappointing to see the university claim to support the freedom of expression, but go to such lengths to restrict protests on their campus. They state the outcomes from the trial were expected, but VIU was only granted a narrow version of what they sought. And they describe it as, quote, attempts to intimidate students, end quote. They also state the hypocrisy of VIU claiming the campus as private property while also practicing reconciliation, and they state VIU, quote, often emphasizes land acknowledgement, decolonization, and truth and reconciliation, end quote. The encampment further states this shows the university's position being, quote, in line with colonial values, end quote, which they state, quote, directly contradicts what the university and the government publicly set out to do in their decolonization efforts, end quote. In the statement, they say, while the encampment trial proceeded over the last 2 weeks, anti-Palestinian hate and the conflict in Palestine were acknowledged in the BC Supreme Court and shown to a wider audience. They state they view this as a positive outcome. This is the second injunction made against a university pro-Palestine encampment after the Ontario Supreme Court granted the University of Toronto an injunction against an encampment back in July. The encampment will have until Sunday, August 18th at 9:30 a.m. to vacate. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
And indeed, in accordance with that court decision, the camp at Vancouver Island University was taken down yesterday without protest and with the cooperation of the encampment. I don't think that'll be the end of protest actions from the community that is protesting the war in Gaza. They have been active in many, many other places and venues, and I think they will continue to be so. Also in the news today, of course, further efforts to reach a ceasefire in the Gaza war. I don't know how many how many efforts have been in that area so far, but judging from the sort of tenor of the news reports I've heard, it doesn't sound like we're on the edge of any kind of breakthrough coming up, despite the efforts of the U.S. Secretary of State is in Israel right now, and other parties, and they seem very far apart from any kind of conclusion to the ongoing bloodshed.
A part of it is a vaccination. What exactly is it? Is it smallpox? What is the vaccination they want the children, the Palestinian children, to have?
Oh, I hadn't heard about that, but I can imagine the whole, you know, healthcare situation in Gaza is pretty desperate at these times.
Okay, No. It's some sort of they want a vaccination for. I think it's I don't smallpox, something like that, and they want because there's been a outbreak of it, and so they want to have the Palestinian children vaccinated. That's one of the reasons they want a ceasefire now. So you hadn't heard that?
No.
Okay. I think it was on Democracy Now! This morning on the Washington State program.
Yeah.
station.
Yeah, well, of course, the other thing, big thing in the news today, international news, is the start of the Democratic Convention in the United States. We're not going to talk about that really today because, of course, Democracy Now! Coming up at 11 o'clock is going to dig into that extensively, and they will be doing so all week. And then, of course, we get into the final stretch of the U.S. election, which is a whole new ballgame after the events of the last month and a bit.
Well, the other thing is that these conventions, I mean, both of them, there wasn't much drama to it because it's like we already know who's going to be. It's kind of just it's a convention. Democracy Now!, are we going to do the whole 2 hours? Because the Washington State.
No, we're just going to do the 1 hour.
The Washington State is done 2 hours. I heard, but they were mentioning the 1968. In fact, the hour long one. SDS 1968?
Right.
One of the people is going to be interviewed.
Well, one of the things that's happening, I don't remember that, but one of the things that is happening today, and of course, carrying on from the idea of protesting the war in Gaza, is that a very large contingent of protesters have gathered in Chicago to protest the war in Gaza and the position of the Democratic Party on support for Israel. So that should be interesting to see how that transpires. Be interesting to see what the numbers are, the number of people who travel to Chicago for the purpose of protesting at the convention and how that plays out. I know that protesters are getting some place on the agenda to air their views.
I think if Joe Biden had remained, there would have been more friction with that. I think Kamala Harris... But she did see the Prime Minister of Israel, mm-hmm. but she wasn't in either the House of Representatives or the Senate when he spoke.
Yeah.
So it's sort of no one that she doesn't go 100%.
She's definitely cooler on things than Biden was.
So, I think it's it'll also they were mentioning on the show we're going to hear from on Democracy Now! After this. The mayor of Chicago in 1968 was not as progressive as this current mayor supposedly is. It was not a... Anyway, I guess Kamara is not quite Hubert Humphrey or whatever.
Right.
Well, one thing, I checked on my tablet. It's polio. They want to give the polio vaccine to the Gaza children.
Yeah, well, there's
been a polio outbreak in there, and they want... That's what it is.
That sounds pretty important because that's, something that can affect those children lifelong if it's not dealt with.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what it is. My tablet. Anyway, I guess from a few weeks ago, we know I was part of the... I think the polio vaccine works. So even though there's been some odd... I've heard a lot of odd theories in general about things, but...
Well, I'll say for myself, I'm very happy with vaccines. Lucky that I haven't experienced a whole lot of the diseases that I might have had I not been vaccinated by my parents as a child.
Well, we have a middle... Anyway, it's sort of kind of a moot issue now, I guess, about the COVID vaccine, because now the BC healthcare workers don't have to be vaccinated for COVID right now.
Right.
So it's sort of a form, but it's, as okay. I said in a show, it's... I think the issues with that are rather, it's sort of up in the air for me. I mean, I did take one side over the other, mm-hmm. but as I mentioned about 4 weeks ago, I really can't put a 100% case about my views.
Right. Well, we're not here to talk about vaccines today anyway, so.
Well, polio vaccine works, I would presume.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was it.
All right, here we have a report from our friends in Smithers, BC, about coping with wildfires and the evacuations that people are forced into when they sweep through or near your community.
Many people live in an area at risk of a wildfire here in BC, so it's important to take the time to get prepared if you find yourself in the position of needing to evacuate your home and to understand what to do before, during, and after a wildfire. But living in uncertainty and not knowing how to cope with the stress for yourself and your loved one takes a toll on your mental and physical health. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Raina Fomerton in Prince George about the stresses and trauma that can come with needing to evacuate your home due to a natural disaster and how to manage your and your family's anxieties. It may be helpful to keep a pen and paper close. If you are listening at the end of the conversation, Dr. Raina Fomerton shares phone numbers for crisis lines as well as helpful websites to prepare you for the physical and mental strain of needing to evacuate your home due to a natural disaster.
My name is Dr. Raina Fomerton. I'm a public health preventive medicine physician, and I'm one of the medical health officers at Northern Health.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Dr. Fomerton. So today we're speaking about coping through disaster stress. And in the province right now, a big stress for people is wildfires. It's the uncertainty and the decision to leave your home. It's got to be one of the biggest stresses that a family can experience. Can you tell me what some of the stresses of being evacuated due to an emergency would be?
Yeah, absolutely. Having to flee your home and leave all of your possessions behind and relocate can definitely cause a lot of anxiety and fear. And it's like very normal for those who have had to evacuate or who may have to evacuate to have those feelings. It's like you said, a lot of uncertainty. It's a very abnormal situation. And it's very difficult to predict when a big wildfire is going to occur. Just around that concept of stress and anxiety around this whole sort of issue in the context of climate change and climate change events and wildfires specifically are hitting us hard again this year would be kind of four categories. One would be to prepare. Two would be to take care of the basics. Three would be ask for help. And fourth would be help others. And I can go into each of those in a little more detail if that would be helpful.
Yeah, please do.
Well, the first one is preparing both yourself and your family. Having that clear emergency plan and kit ready for your family, if you have pets and livestock as well, that can really ease your mind and allow you to focus on other things. So for resources to help you understand the hazards in your area, and then also resources to help you build your personal or family emergency plan, you can visit Prepared BC. And then for the wildfire smoke and steps you can take around protecting your health, you can visit the BC CDC, the BC Center for Disease Control. There's tons of just superb resources on steps you can take. So then the second category in terms of trying to stay mentally healthier this summer would be to take care of the basics. And I know it sounds obvious, like eating and getting enough sleep, being kind to yourself, giving and accepting support, having a daily routine where you integrate things that are helpful and work for you, for your mental and physical health. And some people don't think about this, but actually the news coverage around disaster events and occurring all over BC, Canada, and in the world, taking a break from some of that and from thinking and talking about disasters all the time can also give yourself that mental space. And then thirdly, it would be ask for help. So whether it's family, friends, a doctor, a professional counselor, that really can be helpful to just talk. Keeping things bottled up inside is never a good thing for stress and anxiety. There's also crisis lines that are available 24/7. If you've been experiencing symptoms for more than a couple of weeks, you should probably consult your family physician or call the virtual Northern Health Hotline or one of the crisis lines, because one of the crisis lines would be great for in the moment stress. But if you're having long-term chronic stress, speaking to a physician would be advisable. And then in Northern Health, we also have mental health community programs, which you can look up online. And for those who may not be aware of what the symptoms can include for stress and anxiety, some of them can include sleeping and eating disturbances, feeling sad, depressed, or hopeless, being anxious or fearful, and having recurring pervasive thoughts or even nightmares about the event, and avoiding activities or places that remind them of the event. And then last but not least is helping others. That can both be positive mental health benefits for yourself to be helping others, as well as for those other people that you're helping. It's potentially more challenging for people living with mental health issues or anyone that have few kind of social support. So really reaching out to connect can be a huge help. Who've experienced previous wildfire evacuations or health effects due to the smoke in the air may need help from the adults that provide care for them. And so there's a really good list of mental health tips for parents on the Canadian Mental Health Association website.
Dr. Ferberton, you actually touched on what I did want to speak on next, with more specifically for caregivers. If you wouldn't mind extrapolating on what some of the tactics for parents with young children being, as you mentioned, first off, exposed to the smoke, but then also asking questions to their parents that their parents might not know how to answer. Why did this happen? Who's going to help us? Are we safe? Those kind of questions. Are there maybe some examples or tips that you would give parents in order to help explain a very difficult situation to children?
So yeah. For the littles, you want to be quite concrete. So for example, if there's a power outage, you tell the child, like, the wind broke a tree branch and it fell on the electrical line, and that's why the lights don't work. So just so similar for whatever the emergency or the situation is, just trying to be simple and very concrete. That's how they best understand. And the younger children might regress a little bit in terms of behavior, and just letting them know that's okay. So they might wet their bed. They might start sucking their thumb, doing things that they did that stopped doing a couple years ago, and being very clingy and cry, and just letting them know that's okay. And for us as parents to also just anticipate that is actually expected and normal, and reassuring them that you will keep them safe. Yeah, and for kids more in that 6 to 11 age range, they're obviously more capable of articulating their own understandings and their beliefs and whatnot. So it's helpful to ask them what they understand about the situation and what they feel about it. So oftentimes children will tell you things and their fears are actually based on misinformation, which you then as a parent or caregiver have the opportunity to correct. And then letting them ask questions and just knowing it's okay to, when kids ask questions, that you can say you don't know it, as an answer to some of those questions. Kids are very attached to their routine as much as possible. Try to keep their routines, keep their play dates, keep their bedtime routine, all of those things as much as possible. That's very comforting for children. Giving them, this is true for all things in life when raising children, but when possible, giving them that sense that they do get chances to make decisions and feel in control. But during times of stress, it's even more important. Little things like giving the choices of what to wear. You want to wear this hat or that hat, and maybe what to eat. You want carrots or peppers or things like that, just giving them a sense of control. And similar to what I talked about for the little, the very little children, just understanding that there's going to be some behavioral instability, potentially nightmares, irritability, anger outbursts, and withdrawal, perhaps all the spectrum of things, crying and getting angry, and just letting them know that, so expecting that again as a parent, that's normal, and then letting them know it's normal. And then finally, when you're talking about the older children, adolescent children, ages 12 to 17, ask how you can support them and acknowledge their feelings. They may be having flashbacks or depression or nightmares, and just asking how you can support them. Sometimes being involved as well in helping the community is actually very therapeutic. If there's any sort of rebuilding activity or volunteer community sort of things where they can feel useful rather than feeling helpless. At that age, children can be very useful and helpful. And so getting them involved in what they can be useful for in terms of rebuilding efforts or community spirit raising efforts or